So we're going to start, as usual, with a just brief connection. So get comfortable in your chair or your bed or your sofa, wherever you are. Take a deep breath. And just follow with your senses, not with your mind, but with your senses, the air as it moves through your body. Feel the breath going into your nose, into your lungs, and wherever it goes, just let it go where it goes, whether it makes sense or it doesn't. And just be with that for maybe 10 seconds, breathing in and out, feeling the breath. And even if you're very busy, just try this, just for a few seconds. Because the breath moves the blood, carries the soul. And as you're breathing, allow yourself to become aware that you are now connected with a field. And through that field, you're connected with many, many others from around this planet who right at this very moment are listening to these same words, breathing together with all of us, and connecting to the same place and time beyond the limits of place and time. So with that, I want to officially welcome Mark Nasik, a.k.a. Namaste Man. Mark is an internationally known teacher, a healer, shaman, yogi, mystic, Reiki master, and holistic health and business consultant. Well known for facilitating life-changing experiences, Mark's been featured on TV and radio nationally and internationally. He's been on a quest for quite a few years, a quest for health, vitality, longevity, and spiritual enlightenment. And in that quest, along the way, he studied with many masters of the world's traditions and religions, has presented at the world's top resorts, spas, institutes, and centers, some really well-known names, including Canyon Ranch Health Resort, Miraval Life and Balance Resort, Kripalu Center, the Omega Institute, Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center, that's Gabriel Cousins, I believe, then the Ann Wigmore Center and Wigmore Institute, as well as aboard the world's most famous ocean liner, Queen Mary II. So a very broad background. But at his journey, as he'll explain to us tonight, led him ultimately to what he does now, which is Kabbalistic healing. And if you're lucky enough to be on the call tonight or listening to the replay, you're going to get more than just information. You will actually have an experience of a little, at least a little taste of the kind of healing that Mark does. His clients include regular people, if anybody could be called a regular person, CEOs, doctors, attorneys, heads of state, Hollywood celebrities, entrepreneurs, and well-known spiritual masters and teachers. So with that, I want to officially welcome you, Mark, and thanks so much for being here with us on the call tonight.
Thank you so much, Sifra. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And to David in the background with his many hands running many computers, making sure that we're all happy campers here. So thank you, David.
David does do that, yes. Thank you. I'll thank you too, David. Okay, so we have here a sophisticated audience, and sophisticated even, I think, for the most part, before they started listening to the Quantum Healing and Soul interview series. So people here know a lot about energy and how it works, but I'd still like to ask you from your perspective to start by explaining a little bit of what energy is, what's the relationship of energy to healing, and then we can go deeper from there.
Well, first of all, I just want to say a prayer. So if everyone could just stop what you're doing again, and if it's possible, if it's not, I understand. And just bring your awareness to your breath. And then bring your awareness to your heart. And in that place, Ana Bakoach, Gedulat Yemincha, Tetir Tzura, Kabel Rinat, Amcha, Sagvenu, Taharenu Nora, Nagibor Dorshe Yehudcha, Kepavat Shomrem Bakem, Taharem Rakame, Tidkatecha, Tamid Gomlem, Chasin Kadosh Barov Tuvcha, Nehel Adatecha Yehid Gehe Lamcha Pnei Zokrei Kedushatecha Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tzaktenu Yoda'a Ta'alamot. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So energy. Energy, as we know from Einstein, is E equals MC squared. And energy can change form from, let's say, having an ice cube on a hot Arizona day. In a few minutes, it's going to be a little puddle of water. In another few minutes, it's going to be a gas. So we know it can change form pretty quickly. And we know that we might not even be able to see it. But even though we can't see it, we know it exists. Just like all the colors of the rainbow, red to violet and everything in between, we can see those colors. But on top of red, there's infrared, which we can't see, but we know that's real because Kodak makes a film for us to photograph with infrared photography. And above violet is ultraviolet, and we know that exists, even though we can't see it, because we wear sunglasses to protect ourselves from it. And if we take two magnets, North Pole to South Pole, we know that there's some force that we can't see that makes them come together. And if we flip one of those magnets over, we know that the force pushes them away. But some of you might not know that if you take one of those magnets and slam it on the ground, it's never going to stick to your refrigerator again. Because when the magnet hits the floor, the physical magnet stops, but the energy of the magnet keeps going even though the floor is there. It goes through the floor because energy does not know time and space. So when you pick that magnet up on the floor, it's never going to stick to your refrigerator. So that is takes us to how does this have to relate to healing? That, you know, if you have a cassette, in the old days, if you were sick of listening to Madonna or something, you could get this box that had magnets spinning in it, and you put the cassette on the box, and the cassette is erased. And then you could put something else on, like Shlomo Kaulbach or something, and have a whole different experience. So from this level comes the healing based on this science. Because as we know, everything in the universe is made up of, or matter is made up of three things: electrons, neutrons, and protons. And an electron, a neutron, and a proton makes an electric circuit. Every cell in your body has an electron, a neutron, and a proton. So we are electric. And we know this because when we hook ourselves up to an EKG at the hospital, we can see our pulse. We know that the brain is sending electronic impulses through the nervous system to the body, and our body moves. So we live in an energetic world, which you all know. So when we facilitate healing, because every cell in the body has an electron, proton, and neutron, and when we have experiences of joy, of bliss, of trauma, or pain, these experiences are stored in the cells, in the place of the electric charge of the proton, neutron, and electron. So maybe something happens to someone in their childhood that was so painful that they blocked it out. Not on purpose blocking out the memory, but in that moment when we're children, and we experience a trauma, if we really felt the pain of the trauma, it could potentially kill us. So what we do is we make up something else happened. And in that moment, that information is not in our mind or our subconscious mind. The only place it remains is stored in the cells of our body. So when we facilitate healing, we have to go past mind, or we can choose to go past mind and past subconscious mind and past the story to the archive of the body where all this information is stored, and from that place facilitate healing. So does that answer your question, Schiffer, about...
Deeply. And in a very tangible way, too. I never actually took the time or had the correct visuals to kind of walk through my own physical being as, you know, from an energetic perspective, looking at how much we're already dealing with energy, relying on energy in our moment-to-moment life. You know, and we hear it as a concept, but it makes it very real. So my next question then, just going deeper, what's the difference between energy healing or something like energy psychology, EFT or TAT or whatever the other modalities might be, and soul-based healing?
That's a great question. So a lot of people and a lot of paths of healing can heal amazing, amazing things, everything, actually. There's so many different modalities. I'm not going to name them because you all know them and have probably all practiced them. And so what I learned through my own practice of learning different methodologies and practicing different modalities of healing is that we can heal symptoms. We can heal different physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual imbalances. But at the very deepest level, we can still be in need of repair or tikkun or fixing on the deepest, deepest level. And I'll explain that a little bit more by talking about an airplane. That when an airplane, God forbid, crashes, the people at the FAA gather the black box, which is like can survive just about anything, and in it is recorded everything that plane did before the accident. And from that place, they can know what happened to prevent something else happening like that. So even though everything is stored in the cells and we can heal at a cellular level, there's a place like this black box in our body, and it's in our heart. But it's not just anywhere in our heart. It's in the deepest layer of the heart, past the layers of personality, past layers, so many layers of the heart into what I'll call the spirit or the essence or the soul, the deepest of the deepest place. And when we access that place and heal from that place, we're actually healing and fixing the soul. And this might not happen, the fixing of the soul might not happen even though all the symptoms of a disease might go away, and that intention was your healing was for the disease to go away. That doesn't mean there's a fixing or a tikkun or a repair or a healing of the soul.
So what happens if the soul, two questions on that. Number one, what happens if the soul doesn't heal? Like, what impact does that have on us if let's say we've healed other things? Well, let's start with that, one question at a time.
I feel then the soul will continue to manifest from a place that still needs fixing. So there's going to continue to be manifestations of patterns, of behaviors, of illness, of the like, until this deepest tikkun is made, deepest repair is made, healing is made.
And then looking at that from the opposite point of view, if a person can heal deeply enough on the soul level, then what would life look like?
Then I think a whole series of lessons or patterns or behaviors will cease to manifest because of that schism or that leak or that break in the soul, where where that actualization is, if that makes any sense.
What I'm either hearing or feeling when you're speaking about this is that you're pointing to a possibility of getting to a place of presence in the ultimate sense, where you will be on the personality.
Exactly.
Well, okay. So next question. It's making me kind of breathless, actually. We think of the soul as perfect. I know people often talk about, and I'm not speaking particularly in a Kabbalistic concept where the soul is described in more details and so forth, but, you know, generally we think of the soul as the perfect part of us, the eternal part of us, the immutable part of us, and the body and the ego is the ever-changing, temporary, transient, you know, partly not necessarily all good part. So you're describing the soul, though, as needing what Kabbalah calls a tikkun or a fixing. So how can you speak to that? Is the soul perfect to start with? Is it not perfect? What does it mean to fix a soul?
Well, first of all, I'll say every soul is perfect and every soul is pure in the deepest sense of soul. So it's very... to talk about this stuff in words, on some level, does it no justice. Because it's like trying to describe God, and no matter how we talk about it, how poetic we get, to experience the divine personally, it's like if a painting says 1,000 words.
Mm.
So... and on some level, describing this stuff is a bit semantics because we all have our own description of soul, what it is, what it isn't, how does it work, and it opens up a whole bag of what are we really talking about. So what I will say, with that said, is that yes, every soul is perfect. Everything that everyone has done in one life is perfect. Even though there's places that you could say, oh, well, that wasn't perfect and that wasn't perfect. How could he say that? So perfection, from my point of view and from the place of healing, is that we are experiencing exactly what we need to experience, because if we didn't need to experience it, we wouldn't be experiencing it. So what we are experiencing must be perfect.
Meaning just with a purpose.
Yes. Yes. There's a great rabbi, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, who is referred to in a book called The Wings of the Sun by Avram Greenbaum. It's a traditional Jewish healing in theory and practice. And in it, he's talking about that Rabbi Nachman is speaking that the soul when someone experiences an illness, the medicine and cure for that illness is actually in the illness. And if we were to take away someone's illness without them having had the journey of that illness, they wouldn't get it. There wouldn't be a complete healing.
So it's a package. The illness and the healing or the lesson or the light that's being delivered,
yes,
gets delivered within the illness?
Yes. I mean, when I ran the Ann Wigmore Institute in Puerto Rico, there was a book that this woman wrote who talks about her experience with cancer, and that cancer was actually a gift because she learned how to live. She learned that how she was living was not living, and the end of her life, after the time she experienced cancer, she really learned how to live and how to be grateful for what is and live in the moment and totally be present in that moment and with the reality of what was going on for her. And it changed her whole perspective and her whole experience and her experience of being filled with life force and living a humble, present, grateful life in the days that she did. Mm. So as uncomfortable and unpleasant and not fun some of the things that we experience in life are, there's always a divine reason and a divine blessing in those. And what Kabbalah would say is some of the most powerful things are hidden. And that there's actually more light in the darkness than in the light. And when I say darkness, I'm not talking about negativity or evil or that kind of darkness. I'm talking about darkness that actually feels like a black, soft, velvety, beautiful kind of darkness, that there's more light in there. And to share more what I mean about that, I remember like many years ago I was traveling through Sweden, and I was at the Ann Wigmore, there was an Ann Wigmore live raw food facility healing center in the archipelagos of Sweden. And I used to run at night and have run marathons. So I like to run out at night. And because of this darkness that I'm trying to explain. And so I was running at night and there were street lights. And I was never in this area. And I was running and running. And I could see lights all around me. And at one point, there were no more lights on the road or from houses, and it was just dark. And in the moment, there was darkness, and I'm still running, and I could barely see where my feet were hitting the ground or what's in front of me or where I'm going. Then, like, this sense of, oh, no, the boogeyman's going to get me, and all these fears coming up to distract me from being present. And these fears are uncomfortable and unnerving sometimes and make us question everything. And so I continue running in the darkness and running, and then all of these feelings and thoughts and craziness stops, and I'm just running and I'm at peace and I'm breathing and I'm feeling really, really good. And everything that I talked about a moment ago was no longer there. And it was just this amazing connection to everything just experientially, and a deep, deep, deep sense of peace. And at some point, I had to turn around to go back, and I was still running in the dark, and it was just so beautiful and so expanded feeling, I guess I would say. And then finally, I could see the light off in the distance, and the light got brighter as I ran towards it. And once there was light all around me again, it was kind of like distracting and painful and pulling me out of this deep, deep primal place that I was in myself. And it was like kind of ripping me out of that place, because this light was so intense and so bright that it was hard to stay in that place that I arrived at inside myself. And so I think that kind of explains the darkness that I'm talking about that is beautiful. And
well, it's describing darkness as infinity, or as Kabbalah would say, as an ayin. You described, I think you're talking about the journey of the soul in a way, because we as human beings so tend to cling to what we know and what we can see. You know,
right.
This looks like this, and this is this big, and this is here, and this is there. And, what I see exists, and if I don't see it, I can rest and know that it's not there. When you described going into where it was getting darker and you couldn't see your feet, I got the sense of like running into infinity, like running into deep space, you know, with no end, no end and nothing. And, that's very threatening to the ego, and because we have to be with the unknown, and we
exactly.
so strongly resist when we're centered in that, you know, ego-based identity. We so strongly resist being in the unknown because it's terrifying, because
yeah.
we protect ourselves by knowing. And then,
right.
it, you know, you go through that and you're in alignment with infinity and all possibility and no limits and just that like endless unknown, that like that unknowable self, unknowable essence that I could see if you go through that, coming back to a place where everything's orderly and, you know, finite and limited, and it's just this and not that, and two things can't be in the same place at the same time. It could be very painful. That's beautifully described.
I think the thing that keeps it from being painful is one's ability to let go and one's ability to surrender.
Mm-hmm.
To let go of, okay, even if there's fear and the mind wants to control and we're uncomfortable because we don't know where we're going, even though that's happening, to still release one's grip, to trust in something bigger than us, to trust in God, that like God is driving this vehicle, and to surrender to that force, and that takes everything.
So it's what they call a leap of faith. You have to let
yeah.
go of where you are, of holding on, you know, to what you know, and that at first feels like falling, right?
Exactly.
We talked about this once.
Exactly.
Until you realize when you step off the cliff, you don't fall because you're held up. It's told as a joke, but I don't think I mentioned it on the series before, but it's very, very deep. You know, the story of the man who comes out of a party at night and he's digging around under the lamp, under a streetlight, and another guy comes out and sees him and he says, what are you looking for? So the first guy says, it's my watch. I lost my watch. And the second guy says, oh, where did you lose it? So the first guy points way down the block and says, over there. So the second guy says, and why are you looking over here? And so the first guy says, because it's dark over there. So I think what we really want, you know, when we talk about quantum healing, when we talk about consciousness and soul, when we talk about metamorphosis, which to me is kind of a word that says it all in terms of what we're going through, you know, on a cosmic level, on a personal level, transforming from one plane of being to another, it's where do you find the new self in the dark, in the place where you haven't been before? And that does take a huge quantum leap, and that's when I think things can really shift on the most profound level. And you know, the butterfly is much more beautiful and free than the caterpillar, but the caterpillar doesn't know that until it becomes the butterfly.
Exactly.
So what is Kabbalistic healing? What is it specifically?
So it's healing on the soul, in the soul place that we've been discussing, and that story of the searching for the watch reminded me of what I share with people when the question you just asked me is asked, and that is, how do you do it? What is it? So I want you to imagine for a minute that you're outside of a room that has a very small window, and you can look in, and you can only see one part of this room, maybe 5 square feet of this room. You're outside looking through the window inside the room at this area. I am inside this room, and I have 1,500 dominoes, and I start to set them up. And I make them in this whole big S formation from one part of the room to the other. And where the last 50 dominoes are is right around the place that you can look in the window and see into this room. And all you can see is the last 50 dominoes. I'm in the room, and I can see all 1,500 dominoes. So now you're outside looking in at the last 50 dominoes, and all of a sudden they fall over. But you don't know why. You just know that they fell over. So when someone comes to me and says, oh, I have cancer, I have lupus, I'm having problems in my relationship, something in my business is not working, my child is playing out something that I don't know how to deal with it, whatever the thing is that is causing pain on some level, that is like those last 50 dominoes that have gone over and what's going on right now. So what I know about those dominoes is that they didn't just fall over. I went actually and hit the first domino and made them fall. And all 1,500 dominoes go over. So to fix those 50 dominoes that went over, I'm not going to touch those 50 dominoes. I'm going to go to the first domino and stand that one back up. And when we stand that first domino up, we begin a chain reaction that heals all the other fallen dominoes, so to speak. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it makes beautiful sense. Does it, in your experience, when you start from that level, what's the process like? Does it take a long time? Do you find that people actually heal on the deepest levels, or is it all a work in progress? What do you see happening?
Well, what I see happening is, first, we have to go into the realm, past mind and subconscious mind, to see if we can have knowledge, possibly, of what was the first domino that went over, to talk about things that happened in the past, just emotions and stuff, just to tap in to see if we can recall what happened and how did that set all this whole chain reaction of things, behaviors, situations until it manifests into what happened today. Because some illnesses or diseases that one might have took many years to create in a whole range of behaviors or food intake or something that brought us there. And also maybe not. So it's complex. So when we go into an experience past mind, past subconscious mind, and imagine that that black box of the airplane is in the deepest level of our soul, our essence, and we can tap into that place and heal from that place, then whatever's connected to that wound or that hurt or that pain, however it manifests in the body, will shift after it gets healed in the heart. So we know, let's just say for acupuncture, that if someone is experiencing sciatica, let's say, excruciating pain down one of your legs, and we know or about sciatica that there's a place in the lower back or in the glutes where there's probably a holding of a muscle or tissue or a nerve is being squeezed or there's tension there on the fascia level, skin level, muscle level, even an emotional level. And once that gets released, the sciatica will be no more. So, but that sciatica, if it is coming from an emotional level, it's also traced to the heart. So every, let's say, schism of the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual body can be traced to a deep place in the heart. So we could actually work on someone's sciatica physically and release it, or we could go straight into the heart and see where it's connected and release that. And when we release it in the heart, the sciatica will release on its own.
And does it usually take, I know you do individual sessions, and actually I can share with the listeners that you did one with me that was very profound over the phone. You will be teaching a course that we'll talk about at the end of this call that will help people to not only experience the healing deeply, but to learn how to do it with themselves. But when you do a session, do you find that there's usually, for example, if you were working on sciatica as it's rooted in the heart and you did one session, in your experience, does it unravel? Does it release over days, over months, over years? Is it a multi-layered process? Does it need many sessions, or is it just always different?
That's a great question. I've seen all different variations in time with someone. There's some people that I've been working with for 5 years, and some of the stuff that they were working on then, they're still working on. Mm. There's other people that I've been working with, and things happen the first time we do a session. So it's a difficult the reality of that is that, and that can be challenging when someone's looking at stepping into the healing process.
Right.
But I think the key, again, is one's ability to let go and to surrender. So I think the reason, one of the reasons why it might take longer for someone is because when we're doing this healing, every part of their ego, their psyche, their behavior, their little boy, their little girl is going to, on some level, resist doing this. Because all of those parts of self don't understand or know what is life going to be on the other side of this.
The darkness again.
Yes. There's a great book by Carolyn Meese called Why We Don't Heal. And she tells the story of this girl who is in a wheelchair and has problems. And the question comes up is, well, this girl was being served hand and foot and taken care of. And on some level, this girl didn't want to heal because who was going to take care of her? She'd actually have to do all the things that all these people were doing for her, and it was much more pleasant to have everyone else do them for her. So there's places, even though we say we want to heal, there can be places that are unconscious that really don't want to heal because we don't want to look at how we're in our own way. And that's a very big bite to chew on.
Mm. So one of the possible, not prerequisites, but one of the strong indicators for this kind of healing would be a willingness to at least take a step beyond the known, move a little bit away from the streetlight to see, you know, to go deeper into the self and see what unfolds there.
Yeah, and I think an underlying thing to this energy is death. We're afraid to die.
Yeah.
We don't want to die.
Well, that's why the ego resists change, because for the ego, change feels like death, because the ego is nothing but a construct. And if it has to change its self-perception, it's gone.
Right. And if we really understood that when we die, it's a transformation of the soul. So there's physical death, there's emotional death, there's spiritual death. You know, and I'll tell you a story of a client that I worked with that was referred to me because she was diagnosed with a terminal illness and had a surgery and had things removed. And this person was afraid to die because they had a child that they wanted to be around for, which is a beautiful thing, you know. And so she wanted to learn how to meditate and take control of her life on a whole nother level. And her background was in the medical profession, and she understood that world. She was a professional in the medical world. She was a doctor. So when I began to work with her, I understood that it would be very hard to teach this person to meditate because she's afraid to die. And that's why we're even working together, is because she doesn't want to die. The fear is that big. So when I realized how big her fear of death was, I said, you know, this meditation thing's not going to really work. Because to meditate is like voluntarily saying, kill me. I want to die. Because to actually meditate, the ego in the mind has to be out of the way. And what I learned with this person is that they resonated, they associated their existence with their existence of their own mind. So much to say that this person believed that if they did not have any thoughts, they would cease to exist. If they didn't have any thoughts, they would be dead, is what this person believed. And if meditation is not having any thought and quieting one's mind, and to be dead is having no thought, why would she want to meditate?
Right.
That's exactly what she's trying to get away from, this whole death thing. So I had to share with her to say, okay, do you think it's possible? Have you ever experienced something? We had to show her a way that, like, the closest thing to death is maybe falling asleep and dreaming, which is also a reason why a lot of people have insomnia. It's this whole letting go thing and surrendering thing that people really resist. But if she could associate herself with something other than her being is her mind, we would be able to get somewhere. So I said to her, what if you are able to meditate and not have any thought? And after the experience, or even during the experience of feeling, okay, there's no thoughts, mind is not engaged, but I am still here. My soul is still here. My soul is still alive and well and happy. And then after the experience, you would come back and continue to have thoughts. Would you be open to experience that possibility? And she said yes. So from that place, I led her in a meditation. And after the experience, which I thought, okay, this is going to be disastrous, she totally surprised me and said, that was amazing. That was totally amazing. I was at this place where I wasn't having any thoughts, and like I felt like I was dying and I was dead. But there was this other part of me that was aware that I still was. And that experience changed her whole reality and ability to meditate and to walk through a perceived death that really wasn't a death, but was just a fear.
So what effect did that have on her in the long run?
She was free. She was not afraid of death like in the past. She had more peace on a daily basis, and it opened up a whole other world for her in which to live that was way more spacious. It's like having a 27-room castle and living in the closet of one room because you can't figure out how to open the doors and the windows of the others. Suddenly, all the doors and windows are open. There's fresh air, there's light, there's space, and the soul and the body and the mind and the spirit is full of life.
Which means that certainly the maximum chance for healing on all levels becomes present.
Exactly. Because that field, one is now plugged in and open to that field coming in to touch them on the deepest level. So like if we go down to the beach or the lake or a stream with a cup, an empty cup, we're only going to be able to fill that cup one cup. We can't get any more, no matter how we try it. That cup is only going to hold a cup. If we go down with a quart, we're going to get a little more. If we go down with a gallon, a little more. If we go down with a 5-gallon jug, if we go down with one of those trucks that carries bottled water, think of how much we can get. So the more we can expand ourselves and drop our limitations and our beliefs and our fears, and surrender to the vastness and the greatness of the divine, which is infinite, we have the possibility of being filled with that infinite.
It's so interesting because I think people feel, I know I did for a very long time, that if you, as you say, surrender to the divine, it's like you disappear, but it's not really so. Just like if you don't have thoughts, you didn't disappear. What happened is you're no longer tied up to one way of being or one way of thinking or whatever. You can be still, and then you can respond as you choose or create as you choose or co-create as you choose from moving out of that stillness at will. But it's, you know, you're not stuck in that place of no form. You're just free to take whatever form, and that's a very different, in fact, that is a divine experience, actually. That's
exactly.
The experience of the Creator himself, that because he's not tied to anything, because he doesn't have habitual repetitive thoughts or needs or, you know, limiting beliefs or anything, so he can take any form, show up in any way, finite, infinite, limited, unlimited, many things at the same time that are all different, and I guess, you know, on the deepest level of the no longer wounded soul, we have that power as well. So I'd like to ask you, I'm probably going to keep you on a little bit after the hour if you're willing, but still there's a lot to get through. So I'd like to do is if I could ask you just to share with all of us kind of briefly, but your story of how you got here and why Kabbalistic healing. And then I'd like to share a little bit about the program that you're offering because I think it might be of interest to people, and it certainly is to me. And then if you're willing to stay on that long, if you could guide us through that mini session that we talked about, that would be awesome.
Happy to do it.
Okay, so let's go.
All right. So Schiffer asked, how did I arrive to this place of Kabbalistic healing? And what I can say is after practicing yoga, practicing Qigong, practicing and teaching these modalities, being a Reiki master, studying with Native American medicine people, with traveling to India and having experiences with Kundalini, and working with nutrition in healing and herbs, and studying with a Sufi master in California, I had some amazing experiences, which one I'll share with you now. I was introduced to a Sufi master from Jerusalem who was teaching in the States, an older gentleman in his late 70s, and I was at a school called this was also at the time that I was working at Canyon Ranch, teaching yoga, meditation, Qigong, and doing a healing session that was offered out of their metaphysical department called Shamanic Journey. And basically, Shamanic Journey is taking someone into an altered state, past mind, past subconscious mind, only with the use of breath, sound, vibration, music, that type of thing. And once someone's in this place, holding a space for the divine, for God to heal this person. So I was doing those things at the time of what I'm going to tell you occurred. And I was at this school, the University of Spiritual Healing and Sufism, based out of California, and I was learning new healing modalities that were based God-focused and prayer-centered, and I was giving another student a healing, and the whole week of this experience, I was feeling this pain in the upper right part of my body. And I got a massage, and it didn't help. And I realized, okay, this is not a physical thing. This is a physical thing that's manifested because of an emotional thing. And I wasn't sure what it was. But the pain in my upper right side of my heart, shoulder, and behind my shoulder blade was pretty intense. And so I was giving this woman a healing when, just imagine, you know, at the banks they have these big vault doors, right? Imagine that that was welded shut. And then, you know, the prison wire that's at the top of the fence around the prison, that razor wire, yes.
Yeah.
Imagine razor wire around the outskirts of this vault door. And imagine that that whole construction was inside the right side of my body. Because when I was giving this woman a healing, I began to cry, go into catharsis, my body catharting, and it was as if that door got blown open.
Wow.
To my own pain, which was very intense, and I didn't even know what it was. And so the teachers had to come around to contain me because my body was catharting. And after about 20 minutes and everything stopped, I said, wow, when I get home, I have to quit Canyon Ranch. Because the work that I just learned is so much deeper than what I've been doing. And I want to take my work to a whole nother level, to the level of this kind of healing. See, when I was doing that work at Canyon Ranch, I had all kinds of people with all kinds of challenges and heard and saw things that I would hope no one would have to hear or see. And so the pain that people released in these sessions was intense. And my body got to be in the presence of that pain. And I was pretty good at being at the presence of their pain. Up to the place where that pain was so intense that this place in my upper right shoulder got activated, which was not often. And many healers, as healers, I think we all know that we can spiritually converse with ourselves to make anything that we don't want to look like spiritually okay, which is a blessing and a curse. So what I got in touch with was that there was a place that I was holding back my own heart in the presence of all this pain because it was actually touching my pain and it was uncomfortable and I didn't want to go there because it was too painful. So this is the place, like when we're a little kid, something happens to us, that we make up something else happened and another reality, because if we really felt that pain, it could kill us. So what we did then as children to protect ourselves was a really good thing. But now as adults, it causes more pain and stops our spiritual growth. So when we can go into the depths of our own pain willingly, ready to die, that's powerful. And still be here, of course.
And you're not saying that a person has to have that level of willingness before they can work with you or benefit from what you have to teach, right?
Correct.
Okay. That's a high bar to entry. Be ready to die, and then you can work with Mark. No, just kidding.
Well, those are the people I it's more fun to work with those people.
You know, it's really funny because there's a phrase in a text, one of the deepest Kabbalah texts that I've ever tried to learn, and you know, I've thought about it so many times over the years, but it just quotes something. Says mm-hmm. that they it quotes a verse that says, and they reached the gates of death, or so to speak, life mm-hmm. and goodness. There is something about being willing, you know, being willing. If you're willing to anything, which I can't say that I am there, or even why I'm not even willing to be willing, but I can see, you know, on some level, like the more we're willing to let go and surrender, the more we're able to complete that metamorphosis, the more we're able to just start to fly, jump off the cliff, and you don't fall.
Right.
So, it's a challenge, but it's a good one.
So imagine you're playing out in the mud and you're wearing a white T-shirt. And after wrestling in the mud, your T-shirt is now black. So what do? You go home, you get a hose, and you hose off your black T-shirt. It's now white again. Okay? So the essence of what we're doing in this healing is finding the place where there's black spots deep in the place of soul, deep in the place of heart. And if you're familiar with iridology is the study of looking into someone's eyes, the colored part, to diagnose where a problem in someone's body is. So let's say you're looking at someone's eye, they have brown colored eyes, and in the brown, there's a black spot. And you can see this when you take a picture of the eye with a special camera. Excuse me. And you can enlarge the eye. So we know that if there's a spot let's say at 3 o'clock, we put a template of the clock on the eye just to reference a point. At 3 o'clock, there's a dark spot. So 3 o'clock is on the left side in the middle. So if you connect the clock to your body, that would be at the hip on the left side. So we know that there's a block somewhere around the hip on the left side. So we know about the left side that that's the emotional side. And around the hip, knowing in that place, that tells us more information. So this iridology is used for the diagnosis of what's going on in someone's body, because the physical ailment is tracked in the eye. Yeah. Also, if you're into reflexology, we know that every point on the foot is connected to another part of the body. Mm. So it's that understanding that is connected to what I spoke of before, that everything in the body is connected to the heart, just like the feet and the eye. Okay. So what we do is we go past mind, past subconscious mind, into the heart, and get a read, just like the eye, of where is there a dark spot on the heart, on the soul, on the essence, the deepest place. And just like the white T-shirt that got mud all over it, we got the hose. Once we're at that place in the essence, in the soul, we ask Hashem, we ask God to bring his hose of healing and wash our soul. Because only that presence, that force, has the power to do this. And when that is washed, wherever it's tracked in the body, like the left side of the hip to the eye, if that black spot was washed in the eye, then that thing going on in the left hip would disappear. So after the healing from God in the soul, in the essence, whatever was mapped or linked to that place, to that spot, is going to just wash away. Whether it was manifested in the physical body, mental, or emotional, spiritual body. Usually it's all on some level. Mm. And so we know that when Lee Iacocca created the Ford Mustang, you just didn't all of a sudden see the Ford Mustang on the road. It was his idea. He thought, Ford Mustang, that's a sexy car. People are going to like it. It looks like this. It's going to be a success. And he had an image of this car. And then maybe he drew it or had an artist draw it. And then maybe he brought it to his office and talked to some engineers and some R&D people, and they made a little model of it, a plastic one that the wheels didn't even move. And maybe then they made like a matchbox car of it. And then they made a life-size replica of this thing. And then this whole idea grows. And today they're making Mustangs that look like the ones from them because it was such a huge success. So just like Lee's idea of the Mustang was totally in the etheric. And when we heal from the etheric, or the deepest, I'm going to use the etheric, which is in your auric field, or to the deepest place inside your soul, when we heal on that level, the physical has to follow suit. It's science.
I'm getting an image now of the way they do, I guess they used to, I don't know if they still do in restaurants, if you have a whole pile of papers and then they stick them on this pole, like on this metal stick. So
yep.
Wherever the stick is going through every paper. So I'm just seeing mm-hmm. like, you know, it's going through from the soul to the heart to the eye to the every part on every level. It's the same spot. It's just how it manifests as it comes out, or I guess unmanifests as it clears. So, I don't know, you know, if we have the time, you tell me to go quickly into the rest of that story of how you came to Kabbalistic healing, because this was
sure.
something that you had learned from Sufi.
Sure. So Before I go there, I'm going to say that when we do Kabbalistic healing, when we're in the place of the heart and the soul and asking God to wash our essence, our soul, what I'm doing is I'm connecting through prayers, through repeating different permeations of God's name to self, to seeing what we would call Yehudim, or the name of God in its different many letters forms around us, within us, and the portals of energy that the tzaddikim, the righteous ones in the world of Kabbalah, Isaac Luria, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Luzzatto, Rabbi Akiva, those beings that are their souls holding or being a portal for the divine's light to come in and hold the space for that energy to come in and be directed into one soul for this washing, this clearing, this healing, this tikkun. So at the time that I was studying with this Sufi master, I was about to participate in an all-night meditation on one of their holiest days, is Laylat al-Qadr, and I was reading a poetry of a mystic, and it told of this mystic that he was knowledgeable of all the traditions and all the ways and all the religions, and he practiced his own. And in that moment, I'm like, so Mark, what are you doing? You're practicing everyone else's, which has been beautiful and rich and wow. But I felt a longing to, I was born Jewish, and I felt a longing to go to the depths into this tradition as I did into others, and have an understanding and experience of its richness and deepest or depth, and connect in its most energetic, alive, radiant place. And for me, that was through the study of Kabbalah, at which point I then was led to Rabbi Michael Shapiro in Phoenix, Arizona, who is an amazing man and a gifted rabbi and musician, and inspired me so much that I went on a pilgrimage to Israel and to Tzfat, where Kabbalah has very, very deep roots, on a quest to study more. Mm. And so although I'm versed in these other traditions and everything, and I can accommodate people in whatever tradition, me personally, I am practicing what I have learned and what I continue to learn in the Kabbalistic path. And I continue to learn how much I have to learn, which is a very humbling and beautiful and rich experience that I'm feeling very grateful and blessed to be part of, and to, as what Kabbalah means is to receive, and to find the ways where I'm still in my own way, and my work is to get out of my way, and that's a big job. And I continue to do my best to find the ways where I can, where my own soul is longing and wanting to release patterns and behaviors and things that I'm not even aware of, that I can open up to more, to be able to receive more, to not become a 5-gallon container, but to become a 100-gallon container. Mm. And because I know on a mental level that it's possible to receive so much more than I'm receiving. And so I'm trying to do things to keep opening to that possibility.
I feel that when I speak to you, and I have from the first time, which is why we're having this interview now. You know, there's so many awesome healers and spiritual teachers who are in this series and many others, but, you know, when you're standing as that open vessel with the awareness that what's coming in is infinite, and no matter how much of it we have, there's still infinitely more that we don't have. And that, I think, is the ultimate pathway toward our own deepest and destined shift toward our destiny. So that's awesome, and I'm always more intrigued each time I talk to you. So what I want to do, just so everybody knows, because I know sometimes people have a hard time staying on past the hour, we're going to keep going for a bit. I'm going to talk a little bit and ask maybe Mark to talk a little bit about his upcoming program, which he's offering at a very special discount, $85 off the price for listeners to Quantum Healing and Soul. And then Mark is going to guide us through a mini session so we can actually have a taste of what that's about. And, I also want to say that I have a very strong experience that when Mark speaks, there's a field. We talk about morphic fields in a number of these sessions, and, you know, there's a field that's being created that's not just his field, but it's a field that we're all tapping into that's held, created and held by these tzaddikim, these righteous, holy people who downloaded pieces of infinity into the world and continue to do so because it's all always alive. So that's something that I think, you know, I asked Mark before we spoke if during this program it's just going to be informational or there's going to be that energetic experience the whole time, and he told me that, yes, there would be, and that's part of it. So you can go on www.quantumhealingandsoul.com/VIP3, scroll down to Mark's picture, and there you'll find a link. And if you click on that link, what you'll do is get a little web form. You fill out your email and your name, and then you'll get you'll be on the list to receive some free meditations that are still being produced. So as soon as those are ready, you'll get those. But then you'll also be taken to a page. And I don't know, maybe Mark, we might want to add a direct link to this page. You can let me know. But it's a page that describes the program in pretty much detail. And it sounds absolutely fascinating. And I'll just say what I know about it, which is that there are three training classes where Mark will be talking about the whole process and guiding us through how we actually do it for ourselves, and I suppose if we want to for others as well. So the technical pieces of that, the theory of that, and all of that. And then there will be another two extended question and answer periods, and also three extra sessions with three people, very special people that Mark calls luminaries, who are going to be giving us. Well, tell us what they'll be talking about and how that will add to the whole picture.
Tell you what those three people will be talking about?
Yeah, in general. I mean, you don't have to be too specific. But
okay, so one of those people is the Kabbalistic rabbi that I mentioned in Phoenix, Rabbi Michael Shapiro. And another is Rabbi Miles Krassen. And I also studied with him for about 3 years, also in Tucson. He recently moved back to Boulder, Colorado. His organization is called Rain of Blessings, and really beautiful, amazing teachings. And last, definitely not least, is Jonathan Ellerby, who is the spiritual director of Canyon Ranch and facilitate services such as soul coaching and the like, and definitely a parallel brother of mine, who Jonathan just released a new book called Inspiration Deficit Disorder Through Hay House. So and a previous book of his is Return to the Sacred. So the theme that all three of them will be sharing is what we've been talking about on this call, is how to tap into that field, as Schiffer puts it, and be connected and release the limiting whatever that's blocking us from being more, a bigger container for receiving more, and how to stay inspired, how to stay God-connected, God-infused. Like, just imagine that we're hooked up to an IV to God and we're getting this light 24/7.
And, you know, the more life moves around us, and definitely life is moving in the direction of more and more movement, more and more change and shifting, the more everything around us moves, the more important it is, and also the more possible it is to stay, to get rooted and stay more and more deeply rooted from within. So, you know, we try to keep life standing still. That's the nature of human beings, you know, from the living not necessarily from the deep soul places. So we want, you know, we want to get our finances in order and our relationships in order and our bodies in order and our houses in order. And, you know, the nature of life is that things tend toward chaos, and it's impossible to keep things, to get our ducks in a row and keep them in a row, even if we live forever, which we don't. And even if all circumstances were conducive, which they never are. So, you know, it's a good time in history, and it's a good time in, I think, for most of us in life, on the macrocosm and the microcosm, to kind of look towards shifting that paradigm. And, you know, not that we don't want to work on all those things, those are all parts of life and important parts of life, but to do it from that, you know, first domino space, so that we can get powerfully rooted in the essence of who we are, that essence that's free, and that essence that being free has the power to co-create. I was just in a class recently, a Kabbalah class, where the teacher was talking about how if you're above something, if you're starting from a higher level than an issue, whatever the issue is, then resolving the issue is automatic. So if you're functioning in a place of struggle, then, you know, let's say struggle for money, then it's not an easy thing. We get stuck in the struggle. Like Einstein says, that the significant problems can only be solved from a different state of mind than they were created in. But when we are disconnected from that, in a sense, and go deeper in or go higher above, then new solutions come. Then things start to shift and reorganize in ways that seem magical, or I will say miraculous. And I think many of us have experienced this, and certainly I have, and we want to do that more and more. So I'm going to be actually out of town during the first class, but I'm going to see if there's any possible way I can connect from where I am. And are these classes going to be recorded if people can't attend all of them live?
Yeah, they will be recorded, so people will have, whether or not they can be on the actual call or not, everything will be recorded, yes, for sure.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
What you were saying about about chaos and order is that every time we go through a higher vibration or through a major shift, we can let go of what is to embrace what is possible. We go through a period of chaos where everything is chaotic. In
that
fact,
is correct.
There's a scientist who takes some sand and puts it on a plate, and the plate vibrates to a certain vibration, and the sand actually makes a mandala, a perfectly symmetrical shape. And then another vibration is connected to this plate, and it shifts, and a whole nother mandala is created. Thousands of grains of sand somehow know where to go. How is that possible? And every time the vibration changes, there's a new pattern that the sand creates. But going from one frequency vibration to the next, the sand looks like a mess. So it's known from the place of quantum physics and science that in the material world, when we change gears, when we change frequencies or vibrations or higher levels of states of consciousness, it's a mess. And we know from living this life that life gets messy. So when you can embrace the mess for a short time, knowing that there's going to be a higher order wants you through that transition, and that place is going to feel more spacious and whole and healing and divinely filled and inspired. It kind of makes it worth the journey.
So
if you're willing to go there, let's go into that place where we can potentially go through a shift and come out the other side in a beautiful mandala, feeling filled with light and grace and mercy and peace and freedom that the Holy One can fill us with.
Okay, let's go.
So I'd invite everybody to be totally still with your physical body, and if you can lay down, more better. And if you have something that you can throw over your eyes, perfect. If not, wonderful. And just let your eyes close. Let your eyes close. And let your awareness be focused on your breath, on the inhale and the exhale. Inhale, fill your belly. Exhale, belly contracts. Inhale, fill the belly. Exhale, belly contracts. Move the bottom jaw side to side and let it go. Placing the tip of the tongue at the roof of the mouth where the teeth and the roof meet. This is an energy spot that'll keep your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual bodies open. And even if the mouth is closed, the teeth are separate. Relax your shoulders. Let your body settle into whatever you're lying or sitting on. The breath slows down. The heart rate slows down just by itself. And know that all the movement of the blood, the pulsation of the heart, the breath, everything that's going on in your body right now is happening because of a presence and a force bigger than you. And that this force is going to keep everything going in your body, like when you sleep or when you meditate. And take a moment just to trust and invite and surrender and to let go and to merge with that presence of God, of Hashem, of the Shekhinah, the feminine essence of the divine, right now. Let your belly get soft. Release your pelvis. Let go of the hip flexors and the glutes. Letting go of the pelvic floor. In fact, the place where your heart resides, it's in this cavity inside your body. And imagine all the muscles around this cavity letting go. So much so that this cavity where your heart resides, it gets bigger. And now if you choose, you can allow your heart to expand into this space. As you let go of your legs, releasing the knees, relaxing the ankles, and you can feel as if there's a warm, nurturing fire in your belly, red, orange, yellow flames burning strong. The flames turn violet, and this violet flame is burning everything, keeping your essence, your soul, pure. And now the flame is turning white. Pure white flame. Ana Bakoach, Gedulat Yemincha, Tetia Tzura, Kabel Rinat Amcha, Sagvenu Tarenu Nora, Nagibor Doshe Yehudcha, Kevavat Shomrem Bakem Tarem Rakamei Tzidkatecha, Tamid Gomlem Chasin Kadosh Baruch Tzidcha Nehel Adatecha, Yechid Gehel Amcha Pnei Zakreish Kedushatecha, Shavatenu Kabel Ushmat Zaktenu Yodea Ta'alumot. And your whole being is surrounded by the four holy cities that represent the elements of earth, fire, water, and air. Jerusalem is the holy city connected to the elements of fire. Hebron is the holy city connected to the element of earth. Tiberia on the Sea of Galilee is connected to the element of water. And it's where Rabbi Akiva and Luzzatto's Kever's shrines are. And in the holy city of Tzfat, connected to air, and that city is the home to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Isaac Loria and many, many other great souls' resting spots. And so just imagine that this divine one, the male and female aspect of God, Hashem, the Shekhinah, is coming in to your being now in the form of golden white light. It is infused into your mind, into your brain, bringing peace of mind, focus of mind, clarity of mind, stillness of mind. It is opening the place between your physical eyes, the place where your inner eye has the opportunity to open and receive direct messages from Source, from God, insights, knowings. They say that if prayer is you talking to God, meditation is you listening for the response. Now into your throat, golden white violet light, giving you the ability to express whatever you need to express, whether you want to dance it, paint it, sing it, however you need to get it out of your body and into the world. And finally, this light of the Holy One is filling your heart. So much so that it is overflowing. And this overflowing is flowing into the blood, the organs, the cells, the DNA. And it's seeping down all the way to the depths of your heart, through the personality, whatever that means, to the very deepest of deep, deep, deep places, all the way into your essence. So I want you to imagine that you open, that you don't do it, that you imagine you open your eyes and you can look into the room that you're sitting or lying in. And you can see the colors and shapes of this place. You can see the textures of the material, of the furniture, of the carpet, of the walls, of the windows. You might be able to see with his light or shadow. And then you imagine that you close your eyes and you don't see that anymore. And I want you to imagine that your physical eyes merge into one at the bridge of your nose. And the two eyes that have become one drop down your face, down your throat, and into your heart, and become the eye of the heart. And the eye of the heart now opens and looks into this same room that you just viewed with your physical eyes. And now look into that room and notice what you see. The colors, the shapes, the textures, the play of light and shadow. And also notice what it feels like to observe the things that you're observing. What sensations are bubbling up because of what the eye of the heart is seeing. The eye of the heart closes. The eye of the heart now turns 180 degrees and opens. And as the eye opens, you are now looking at your very own heart. Just notice, what are the colors that you see? What is the shape or shapes that you see? Textures, anything soft, maybe like a cotton ball, anything sharp, maybe like a piece of broken glass, any place that's luminous, like the light coming through a big, large leaf in the rainforest that's like luminescence, any place that might be dark, and cold and contracted and a little bit foggy and moist. Just notice. Just notice. It's been a very, very long journey. And your soul is a bit tired. So imagine just lying down right here. Focusing your heart eye on the heart. And gently let your heart eye close. And continue to let go of your arms and legs. And maybe even feeling like you could let go of your breath. There's so much stillness and peace. Feeling the golden light traverse the energy of the Shekhinah, the feminine essence of the divine, the energy of the masculine presence of God flowing through your body, bringing light and peace and healing. So much so that all the cells are vibrating and have a rainbow. And you can feel your heart. You can feel your heart. Shaviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. And as you feel your heart, feel like your heart is turning to face the source of light, the feminine divine, the masculine divine. Your heart is turning to embrace it and welcome it. Shaviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. Shaviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. Shaviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. Anna Elna Rafanala. Anna Elna Rafanala. Anna Elna Rafanala Anna Elna Rafanala. Feeling the presence of the divine, seeing the hand of the divine reach out to you. And in the hand of the divine is a golden pen that writes with golden ink. And the Holy One inscribes its signature upon your heart. The Holy One inscribes its signature in golden ink upon your heart. Shaviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. Shaviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid. And imagine we took a cup, a gallon of yellow, golden, saffron juice and put it into a swimming pool. And it gets diffused until all of the water in that pool is golden. This holy name that's been inscribed on your heart in golden ink is being infused into every cell, to all the blood, to all the organs, to all the moisture in the body, and it's traveling all the way down to your toes and fingers and to the depth of even the bone marrow and penetrating the cell wall to dance with every one of those rainbows and to penetrate the spiral DNA so that your DNA, your cells, your soul, your ancestors, your children are being infused, illumined with the sacredness and holiness of the divine right now. Ana Bakoa, Gedulat Yemincha, Tatir Tzura, Kabel Rinat, Amcha, Sagvenu Tarenu Nura, Nagibor Doshe Yehudcha, Kevavat Shomrem, Bakem Tarem, Rakameti Ketecha, Tamid Gomlem, Hasin Kadosh, Barov Tufka, Nehel Adatecha, Yehid Yehe, Lamcha, Pnei Zakre, Kedushatecha, Shavatenu Kabel, Ushmat Zaktenu Yoda, Ta'alamot. There's a great Rebbe, Rabbi Abu Hasera, also known as Baba Sali. And Baba Sali was at a gathering, a celebration, and he had for all of the guests an amazing drink called arak, which is a licorice-tasting drink. And there were cases of this stuff. And he would pour and pour to all the people till everyone had some. Until there was no more, they ran out. And so Baba Sali took a cloth and put it around the empty bottle and continued to fill all the glasses until everyone's cup was full. True story. Consciousness returns to the breath. Consciousness returns to the breath, filling the rise and the fall of the belly with each breath. consciousness returns to the body now, feeling the toes and the fingers wiggle. Wiggling toes and fingers connected to the arms and to the legs. Subtle movement in the spine. Take a deep, deep breath in and slowly exhale. Take another couple breaths. And if you're laying on your back, gently roll over onto your side. And gently pushing yourself up into sitting. And if you're sitting, gently, softly, open your eyes and welcome home. Welcome home. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being with me and Schiffer tonight. I feel very grateful to have had this opportunity to share with you and to receive so much that comes through from the ancient ones. And my prayer is that all of our souls and essences be infused with the holy light of Hanukkah that we just experienced, the time of the most light within the biggest darkness. And may that be an inspiration to say yes and to stay open and to do what Kabbalah is, and that is to receive God's presence. Thank you, thank you. Shalom. Thank you, Shifra.
And thank you, and we're going to open the line so people can say goodnight.